I searched in my heart how to bring cheer with wine, while steering my heart into wisdom divine. To lay hold on folly, I took men to mind, their future days best under heaven to find. I searched in my heart how to bring cheer with wine, while steering my heart into wisdom divine. To lay hold on folly, I took men to mind, their future days best under heaven to find. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 3 and 4, that was, from the Word Green version of 2020. That's our daily scripture for today, little children, the daily proverb. I've been doing a lot of research and catching up on shopping. We'll see how that goes, but I mean, Amazon has changed the way the world works. Here's the Wall of Heaven in Yüzyıngili, Turkey. And you see, if I get the picture of it here, that's the Ark, right? It's one of these images. Here it is. This is the image enlarged of that Wall of Heaven. I guess we can enlarge it further, just so we can move around and zoom in a little bit. See, this is the Ark here on the right, in the middle ground, on the right side here, in this particular picture. It's on the right-hand side, from this angle. And the Wall of Heaven is this cliff on the left side of the upper background here of the picture, and Mount Judy is the right hand peak here of this mountain. That's Mount Judy in the distance on the right, and Noah's Ark right here is this boat-like object, this boat-shaped object. And you can see here as well, I think, these vertical ribs rising on the side of it. It would be hard to imagine this as a geological formation, wouldn't it? But we're not trying to imagine it in that way, because we know the exact dimensions of it show that it is consistent with the actual exact dimensions given in the Bible, with the Egyptian cubit of 20.6 inches, as is, you know, defined by utilizing the length of the ark as it's measured on site there. It's about 515 feet, pretty precisely, and that determines, since the Bible says 300 cubits, determines an Egyptian cubit of 20.6. I haven't even done the calculation recently. Let's do it right now. 515 feet divided by 300 cubits, right? How many feet per cubit, in other words? And then times 12 to get it in inches. 20.6. See that? It's exact. But that implies, and it only implies, that the Egyptian cubit was 20.6, because nobody really knows that number. I don't think, anyway. There are probably different possible ways to obtain that. But this is the way it should be obtained in this case, because then based on that 20.6, the measurement of 138 feet, which was the beam width, times 12, divided by 20.6, for the cubit in inches, after getting the width, the beam width in inches, is 80. So you see, the beam width is 80 cubits. Actually, I don't think that's the beam width, and that's what I got wrong yesterday when we were talking about this. So let's go down. I'll show you why I think I got that wrong. It's in paragraph 19, I think, where we talk about this. We're still in chapter 1 of the article, The Ark of Urartu, The Orient Express. That's our study for today, along with the Thor Heyerdahl Kon-Tiki movie, regarding the expedition of 1947 from Peru to Polynesia, the expedition of Thor Heyerdahl. So this is the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express, the article, and there was a calculation done here, you see, where the 138 feet was obtained by multiplying by phi to obtain that. Is that true? Let me think. It was obtained. Yes, it was multiplying the arc's width as given in the Bible, 50 cubits, right, by the number of inches in the Egyptian cubit, 20.6 times 12, or divided by 12, I should say, to convert into feet, right? Because this is 50 cubits times 20.6 inches per cubit, divided by 12 to get it into the number of feet, right? And then that number of feet multiplied times this number of phi, which is in brackets 1 plus root of 5, the square root of 5, end bracket divided by 2. All in brackets, that expression, which equals phi. The bracket 1 plus root of 5 divided by... bracket 1 plus root of 5, end bracket divided by 2, that's phi. As we've already discussed before. So you multiply by phi. So if we hadn't multiplied by phi, you know, we would get the 138.8 divided by phi. That's what we would have gotten. And when we do that, you know, 138 divided by 1.618, roughly, we'd get... Wait a minute. Oh, hang on. Right? Hang on. What's root of 5? Let's see. What's it? 2 point something. Yeah, that looks about right. So, we got 138. So if I divide by phi, I should get the same number as 50 times 20.6 divided by 12. So let's do that. Let's do that way. 50 times 20.6 divided by 12. That should be 85. Yeah, it is. So it only changes it. You can't change it by that small of an amount. Oh, that's okay. That's a number of feet. 85. Yeah, it's a number of feet. Okay. Yeah, it's not cubits anymore. That's right. Okay, so 80. Aha. 50 cubits width is actually 85 feet, but it was multiplied to get the beam width because the boat is not as, the widest point is the beam. The beam is the widest point, so the average width is much smaller. It's more like 85 on average, right? About half of 138 would be the average because the boat tapers, and half of it would be about 70, so that's 85 is about a little more than half, because some of the boat, you know, it's not a linear shape, it stays wide in parts, so the average is about 85 is about right for the width of it. It's perfectly sensible. That's in feet, 85, right? But then when you multiply by phi, that's how the Bible mentioned none of that. It just said 50 cubits. But when Noah built the ark, they used the number phi, is what was believed by the architect, by the naval architect, Mr. Windsor. And when we multiply by phi, we get the 138, which is the actual measured size that they measured on the actual boat itself on the ark site at Uzengili there in the picture. They measured that width, the maximum width of the boat at its widest point was this number, very close to this number. That's how we know it agrees with, because we defined the 20.6 according to how long that object was, as found there at Uzengili. They measured the length of it, 515 feet, And they used that according to the 300 cubits of the Bible in length to get the 20.6. Right? Now, I mean, you might doubt that that the Bible says any of this, so let's go verify it. Where did it say, how big did it say the ark should be? 300 cubits, the length of the ark, Genesis 6 and 15. 50 cubits, its width, and 30 cubits, its height. Okay, we can rest our case there. 300, 50, and 30. So the width was 50. The length was 300. The 300 length gave us the definition of the Egyptian cubit. Must have been 20.6. So we plugged it back into this equation 50 times 20.6 divided by 12. We got 85 feet. But then, that'd be the average width, right? If it were a box, but it wasn't. It's a ship, not a box. So it has a widest point, which is equal to phi times that average width. And that was 138, which was determined in this equation. But they actually measured it. And they found it to be, I mean, we'll find out wherever we look here. Let's see if it's, it might not be in the article. It might be in I know it's in Mr. Windsor's article, I believe. Anyway, there it is. Let's see if we can find this 138 anywhere else. See, maybe it's 137 or something that they measured. Well, let's go to Mr. Windsor's article now and just verify this. I think it's somewhere here. Where would it be? It's not. There it is. There it is. Okay. So let's look up 137. Yeah, it was measured at 137. They actually measured it. So 137 and a half, very close to 138 or 138.8. So they measured it close enough to what you, I mean, it's an old fossilized relic and they're measuring the beam width. They get it to be very close, within 1 foot being, or within 1 or 2 feet of being the actual same as what the Bible says it should be. That's how we know it's Noah's Ark, right? They can't measure the depth, but the width of it proves it. So that's the amazing thing about this this boat. Apparently it's a boat, and it does fit the description of Noah's Ark based on the dimensions, right? Then they also studied the fact there were rivets found all over it. There were places where there was iron, which Mr. Windsor determined was right at the back end or the stern of the moon pool, which would have been the anchor points for the drogue stones, the anchor stones that were found nearby. A lot of evidence for that being a boat, right? And the shape of it, the fact that there were timbers. There was fossilized wood found. You know, they did a lot of tests on the boat by digging down and finding animal hair and animal dung and things inside where the animals would have been living on the ark. But they did a lot of tests. I mean, we'll probably be covering some of that in this article. Right now, I think we're on paragraph 4, the giant drogue anchor stones, right? And there's a picture of one of them. Really beautiful, beautiful, beautiful work of craftsmanship, I guess you would call it. Or it's a natural stone. It's got inscriptions on it, right? The people have made inscriptions either before or after, I guess, the voyage, but I think some of them were made after, at least some of them. But the thing is, according to the account, the hole was made in the thicker part of the stone, whereas the other end of the stone is thin. You can't see that, I don't think, from this picture, because it's possibly buried underground deeply, quite deeply. But it was a stone with a hole big enough to accommodate a strong enough rope that could have supported the weight of this rock when it was in water. Not when it was, according to the naval architect, he determined that this was for the hemp ropes that the standard used as a standard, you know, in the naval industry or whatever, the hemp ropes that Noah would have been able to also make or have available to him, or at least something similar, right, at the time, the known strength of those ropes, known by the naval architect, Samuel Windsor, is known to be strong enough to support the weight of this huge rock with that hole. Now, right now, I'm not sure. It doesn't look like it's all that strong, but maybe this rock is, or maybe this anchor is no longer the same. It's been weathered over the years, too. But, yeah, it's hard to say whether it's in the same exact condition as when it was used. But there's no way that, and they did use other stones as anchor stones, right? It was common for people to use stones for anchors. But they might just tie the rope around the rock. They wouldn't put a hole through the rock. So that was very unusual to have a hole, I think, in the rock. But let's see, let's read the article. The giant drogue anchor stones found along a line northwest of the Ark landing site have tapered holes. They're tapered holes. That's really important. That means that the rope wouldn't get cut off, right? By the weight pulling on it. And it has a, these holes also have a hollowed out interior for the knot. So the knot in the rope fits into the hollowed out part of the hole. And they're curved to accommodate the direction of the rope so that it prevents shearing or cutting. Shearing just means to cut, right? To cut by pressing against a perpendicular direction, against the rope in a perpendicular direction. That's what it means. Instead of stretching and breaking by tension, it's a shear. In other words, cutting across it. Now, they are entirely, you know, it doesn't shear because it has this curvature in the hole. They are entirely consistent with their use, these stones are, on Noah's Ark. They're entirely consistent because they're big. They are too big to be used on considerably smaller boats. You know, Noah's Ark, it was 1 acre in area. That's about the size of my property here, but it was 500 feet long, which is much longer than my property is. So to imagine a boat that big is rather difficult because there aren't that many boats that big. Nowadays they do have them because they have metal, steel boats. So they can make them bigger than, but this was a wooden boat. Imagining a wooden boat as big as that, 500 feet long, that's almost 2 football fields long, right? Well, it's a long ways. I mean, yeah, it's a huge wooden boat. So this stone was very large because it was used, it's giant. And you can see people standing next to it in some pictures. If you look at some other pictures, you'll see that it's very tall. I think people are not taller than it. And it goes into the ground. It's pretty big. Mr. Samuel Windsor, a naval architect in Seattle, Washington, USA. The man we've been talking about, who was the naval architect who wrote this long article on the subject of the boat, right? He talks about, let's look up the hemp. See? He says, today's requirement of breaking strength, 5 times the rated load. In other words, if it needs to support 100 pounds, it needs to be strong enough to support 500 pounds. That would mean the rope used in the 3-inch hole, which is about 2 3/4 inches in diameter, would have a breaking strength of 42,000 pounds. That's from a naval architect, okay. Because he said earlier, he gave the, look what he talked about here. The largest anchor stone weighs approximately 10 long tons. A long ton is 2,240 pounds. Okay, so the working strength the designer expected was about 1,400 pounds per square inch of circular rope cross-section, right? The cross-section of a rope would be pi r squared, pi times the radius squared, right, to get the cross-sectional area. For example, you could work it out. 1,400 pounds per square inch. So a 3-inch hole, well, we could just do it. Would be 1.5-inch diameter or radius. 1.5 radius squared times pi. We have pi here. There it is. That is 7 square inches. Times 1,400 pounds per square inch. 10,000, right? About 10,000 pounds. So the breaking strength would be 42,000. It's sort of roughly four or five times what the required load would be. That was the heaviest stone that had that weight. The lighter ones would be less than, what was I going to say? 10,000, yeah. Well, the 10,000 pounds, how much did he say the largest stone weighed? Yeah, 10. Well, no, 10 tons. Okay, that was different. That's 10 tons. 1,400 pounds per square inch of circular rope cross-section. The rope used in the 3-inch hole would have a breaking strength of 42,000 pounds. Well, we just calculated that without knowing the weight of the stone. We're just saying we know the dimension of the rope, right? Pi times 1.5 squared. That's the number of inches, times 1,400 pounds per square inch, right? And then let me see what I get for that again. Well, that's what we got. Okay, yeah. Let's go back. There we are. So let's do that calculation. It would be able to support 9,000 pounds, it says. But that would be the required working strength. That's right. That's what they would expect or need it to be strong enough to have. But that's only 10,000 pounds, isn't it? Yeah. About 10,000 pounds. Oh, okay, yeah. Well, that's the smallest anchor stone. The hole was, okay, the 3-inch hole was in the smallest anchor stone. 4 long tons is 4 times 22. So you see, yeah, 4 long tons. Okay, so, yeah, it's 4 times 22, 40 in pounds, right? 8,000. So it's enough to support. The working strength expected is about 9,000 or 10,000, and the weight of the stone is about 9,000, right? But the rope would have to be 5 times that strong, and that is exactly what is said here. It's 42,000. So if, yeah. Maybe you could say 5 times the load, right? So multiply this 8,900 times 5, 44,000. You see, so that's about five times to get 42,000, just about exactly five times almost. So that's very close to being the right strength, and that is well within the capacity according to Mr. Windsor, who writes this here, of hand-wound hemp. It's strong enough to be able to have a breaking strength of 42,000 pounds. So, you see, there's no problem with these calculations being adequate to support the weight of that stone. In this case, the smaller one for the 3-inch hole. So, you know, but you see, he's done all the calculations. You see that? He's done the details. We don't have to do it all, but he's done it. If you want to do it, anyone can do those, repeat those calculations, as I just demonstrated. So he wrote that each of these stones is designed for a specific diameter of hemp rope, which easily suffices for strength. So the rope's like the rope's five times stronger than it needs to be. And it's just standard modern-day hemp rope. It's just made out of hemp, natural materials that Noah would have had. Could have made wound rope back in those days easily as well. Maybe Noah's ropes were even stronger for all we know. We don't know, because we don't have the ropes that he made or that he had available to him. One of the features of the design is that the hole is made in the narrow, thick end of the stone, right there. Now, that's the thick end, is what they're saying. While the other end of the stone is wider, but it is weaker as it is thinner. Also, I wonder why they made it so near the end when they could have made the hole somewhere further down here. That would be my sort of query that I have about that, about this particular stone. But like I said, maybe this stone has been eroded over the years, thousands of years. Maybe it was originally higher up here and the hole was further from the edge. I'm not sure that we know that. But one of the features of the design is that the hole is made in the narrow, thick end of the stone, as we just said. Sorry, I'm reading that twice. Continuing on, the modern standard by his account, Mr. Windsor's, a breaking strength of five times rated load, was surpassed by hand-wound hemp rope, he said, anyway. Okay, so these were approximate weights that were given for the stones, anyway. The approximate 4 tons for the smallest stone. The presence of the stones along a line, so apparently it was lighter than 4 tons, that's why it was exceeded. The five times rated load was exceeded. Was even more than five times the rated load. The strength of the rope was five times and more than what was needed. So that's as a safety margin, right? The rope has to be stronger by a factor of five, because you might be yanking on the rope at some point. There might be some movement of the ship relative to the anchor stone that would cause more than the normal weight of the stone. Plus the stone, I'm not sure, when it was deployed, it probably wasn't deployed until they were actually out on the water, or up in the water, after the ark rose in the water. But we don't know all the details. It's fascinating to contemplate, isn't it? But the presence of the stones along a line leading to the ark site, so they were along a line, too. They were dropped. They're very heavy, so they're not likely to have been moved since that time, right? But the presence of them along this line leading to the ark site confirms their use on the vessel known as Noah's Ark. Remarkable declaration, that is. More than that, it displays beyond doubt the path it took. So we could see the path the ship, Noah's Ark, took going to the landing site near Mount Judy there. More than that, it displays beyond doubt the path it took. Sorry, I repeated that again. Each of the stones weighs between 4 and about 10 tons. Yeah, like we said. And the difficulty of moving them gives no reason to doubt what we just said, right? No, why would anyone want to move them is the question, I guess. They could be moved, but they may well have just been sitting there this number of decades, centuries, and millennia. So these heavy anchor stones stayed put for all 5,291 years. That's a reasonable conclusion because they're along a line that is exactly pointing in the direction of the landing site of the Ark. So they evidently stayed put for all those years, 5,291 years, until the time of the writing of this article, I guess is what this means, yeah. The deluge was in 5,231 before present, which was 1950, so another 50 added to 31 would be 81, and then 10 more years, 2010, right? The date of this article. The animal and human live load made navigation so crucial. You've got a live load on board moving around, animals moving, humans moving. Well, not many humans, but a lot of animals. 8 humans. And the drogue stones stabilized the vessel in heavy seas or wind. Heavy winds, heavy seas. You know, the boat would be tossed around. But these drogue stones hanging down below, weighing tons, stabilize the vessel, right? Because they're pulling. They're pulling, I'm trying to think if they're pulling. They're not pulling from different places, though. They're all pulling from the same mounting point, we believe. So how exactly they stabilize the boat would require some more thinking, I think, on our part to figure that out, if that's really true. But let's see what Mr. Windsor says about that. And these drogue stones could be cut loose, obviously, just cut the rope, for closer maneuvering to land, which is what happened because they were left behind before the Ark landed, as we saw. So let's look up drogue in his article. Their average weight was 7 long tons. Their number is assumed to have been 24. 24 anchor stones that were hanging below the Ark in the water. Look at these things. He talks about where the grain and feed were stored. All sorts of things in his article here. But let's look at the drogue stones here. They've only accounted for 12. So maybe the other 12 anchor stones were stolen. That's possible too. But they believe there were 24. Drogue stones, and they're dragging stones. They're dragged in the water. They're called drogue, I think, for that reason, that they were dragged in the water. There's those found include a flailing stone used in smaller form by Egyptian river masters for maneuvering. A flailing stone. That's remarkable. I don't recall even reading this. Certainly at least 2 such flailing stones would have been carried, and some unused anchors could have remained aboard the vessel and still might be buried in it or buried in the soil above at the beaching point, right up the mountain where they beached before the ship slid down the mountain. Steering a vessel involves a feature unfamiliar to most readers. Oh, we're out of time. Vessel steering usually is by a rudder at the stern. If a tow line connects to the same point, there's so much to read and learn. I think we better stop for today. And we didn't get to the Kon-Tiki yet today. We didn't do that today. But look at all the things there are to learn about this. This naval architect knows a lot of things. Wow. The vessel must be turned while the anchor is in place. Therefore, the anchor line must be connected to the midships section and not to the stern. So there's a lot of things about this that only a naval architect would adequately know and explain, right? But today's date is September 6th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 1747 hours. North American Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And thank you for listening and watching in my behalf. This is Liv Dusty and this is Cassie saying bye for now. That was paragraph 4 of chapter 1 of The Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express. And that's it for today.